From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. This past Friday, the United Nations Security Council considered at a special meeting called in New York by the United States the question of protests in the Islamic Republic of Iran that have developed over the past couple of weeks. Although sound bites of the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations have made the airwaves in the U.S., the statements by the representatives from China and Russia, two permanent members of the Security Council, and Iran, the subject matter of the Security Council's discussion, have not been widely circulated. And so we bring you those here. First, these are the comments of China's Deputy Permanent Representative, Wu Haitao.
Mr. President, today's agenda is the situation of the Middle East. I wish to express China's principal position on this agenda. Recent developments in certain parts of the Middle East are worrying. Some countries are going through wars and conflicts. Hotspot issues are complicated, intertwined, and influence one another. Terrorist forces are rampant and spreading, all of which pose serious challenges on international peace and security. China hopes that countries of the region will work consistently with the international community to improve the situation in the Middle East as quickly as possible and seek a fundamental solution to achieve regional peace, stability, and development. First, we call for a political solution to the hotspot issues in the region. All sides should play constructive roles and persistently promote dialogue and consultation and reach a sustained solution that takes into account interests of all parties. Second, we should resolutely combat terrorism, persisting uniform standards, and employ all kinds of means to eliminate the root causes that breed terrorism. Third, the purpose and principles of the UN Charter and other basic rules governing that govern international relations should be respected, and independent sovereignty and territorial integrity of countries of the region should be respected. Fourthly, countries of the region should be encouraged to strengthen dialogue, deepen understanding and trust. The Palestinian issue is the core of the Middle East issue. The international community should adhere to the two-state solution and work to restart the Israeli-Palestinian negotiations and achieve a comprehensive, just, and sustained solution to the Palestinian issue at an earlier date. The international community should persist in a political solution to the Syrian issue as the main direction, continue to count on the UN as the main channel of mediation, and work towards the comprehensive, just, and careful resolution of the Syrian issue as early as possible. Mr. President, according to the UN Charter, the Council's primary responsibility is maintaining international peace and security. Therefore, the Security Council should not discuss the internal affairs of any country, nor is it the venue for discussing the human rights issue of any country. China takes note of the recent domestic developments of Iran. China hopes and trusts that with the efforts of the Iranian government and people, Iran will remain stable and achieve development. The Iranian situation does not pose any threat on international peace or security, nor is it on the agenda of the Security Council. Discussing the domestic situation of Iran by the Council is a practice that is not in line with the Council's responsibilities as outlined in the UN Charter. Doing so, it does not help resolve the domestic issue of Iran. Thank you, Mr. President.
Ambassador Wu's comments were followed by those of the permanent representative from the Russian Federation, Ambassador Vasily Nebenzia.
Why is the United States, a permanent member of the Security Council and one of the authors of the UN Charter, undermining the authority of the Security Council as the main body which is responsible for maintaining international peace and security? I mean, I think it is obvious for everyone that the topic chosen today does not fall within the prerogatives established by the UN Charter for the Security Council. And the references we hear today to Article 34 of the UN Charter as it applicable to this situation are completely inappropriate. This should be obvious to anyone who will take the time to read Article 34 of the Charter once again. We have often drawn attention to the fact that it is unacceptable to use bogus pretexts to include in the agenda purely internal political affair issues. Why has the United States chosen to do this today, when the domestic situation in Iran has become normalized? And by the way, we should thank Washington for this, because to a large extent, it's thanks to its dynamic words of encouragement and messages to the Iranian people that we witnessed a consolidation of the Iranian society. And they were united by anti-American feelings. The feeling is that there's some sort of inexplicable allergy to this country, and that it clouds the thinking about events in this country and leads to wishful thinking. We obviously regret the loss of lives as a result of demonstrations that weren't so peaceful. However, let Iran deal with its own problems, especially since this is precisely what is taking place. You are dispersing the energy of the Security Council instead of focusing it on dealing with acute crisis situations in Afghanistan, Syria, Libya, Iraq, Yemen, DPRK, on the African continent. Instead of that, you are proposing that we interfere in the internal affairs of a state. And we don't want to be involved in destabilizing Iran or any other country. Instead of that, let's have a substantive discussion on the issue of the Middle East peace process, including the Palestinian question. If we follow your logic, then we should have meetings of the Security Council after the events in Ferguson in Missouri, or after the dispersal by force of the Occupy Wall Street movement in Manhattan. Or maybe we should propose having a Security Council meeting when a wave of demonstrations occurs in some Western country. Mr. President, we shouldn't look far into history to offer many examples of what short-sighted moves accompanied with interference in internal affairs lead to, or attempts to replace undesirable regimes or impose recipes of democracy. Unfortunately, due to various violations and neglect of the founding principles of the Charter, such as independence and sovereign equality of states, a non-interference in internal affairs, peaceful resolution of disputes. Because of that, the situation in many countries of the Middle East that were stable until recently has become horrible. The occupation of Iraq under openly false pretexts, which is still being heavily felt by the people of this country. The gross manipulation of the mandate of the Security Council that led to chaos and destruction in Libya. Methodological incitement and fanning the flames of internecine warfare in Syria and flirting with terrorists. The war in Yemen. All these open wounds will continue to remind us of the destructiveness of geopolitical engineering and the attempts to determine the fates of other states and nations. However, people prefer not to mention this, not to remember this, and when we remind them of this, they pretend that it doesn't concern them. Sometimes we're asked why we're wary about the concept of the prevention of violent extremism. Well, the approach of the American delegation to what is taking place in Iran is an excellent example to illustrate the substance of our concerns. The source of the problem is declared to be suppression of peaceful protests, the cruelty and undemocratic nature of the regime. And there's a parallel drawn to the events in Syria in 2011. A threat to international peace and security is declared. Thus, the need for external interference is justified in the affairs of Iran. This is precisely the kind of approach that is involved in the notion that is being promoted by the United States of violent extremism. And yet, it is precisely incitement from outside and calls on so-called changes could lead to radicalization and violence, whether it's in Iran or any other country. Mr. President, the real reason for convening today's meeting is not an attempt to protect human rights or promote the interests of the Iranian people, but rather as a veiled attempt to use the current moment to continue to undermine the joint comprehensive plan of action. Similar assessments of the situation were expressed in Berlin and in Paris just yesterday. We consider it unacceptable to intentionally undermine the support of the international community for the JCPOA, which is the main achievement in nuclear non-proliferation over the past few years and in international efforts to ensure international and regional security, especially in a situation where the IAEA has continually confirmed full compliance by Iran with its obligations. Instead of that, the United States has continued to introduce unilateral restrictions that are in breach of international law. And we keep wondering, do you have any other means, diplomatic means, other than sanctions at your disposal? Instead of trying to involve the Security Council in internal affairs and interference in internal affairs, the Council should actually support useful initiatives in establishing regional dialogue on security issues. In the framework of that dialogue, we can find solutions to many issues and concerns. Russia has put forward an initiative on establishing confidence-building measures in the Persian Gulf region. The provision of the Resolution 598 from 1987 continues to be unimplemented. This provision instructs the Secretary General to develop, in consultation with regional parties, security and confidence-building measures. It would be useful to pay attention to the ideas of the Secretary General to launch a process of political dialogue to resolve existing differences among key countries of the region. Mr. President, we would like to believe that we won't have meetings such as this one under your presidency or in subsequent presidencies, and that the Council will start working on the issues that the UN Charter has defined for it. Thank you very much.
The session was closed with the following comments from Iran's permanent representative, Ambassador Gholam Ali Khosrou.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Mr. President, the move by the United States to bring to this council protests in Iran by some of our citizens for legitimate grievances, some exacerbated by none other than U.S. itself, in its dereliction of its obligation under the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, is an abuse of its power as a permanent member and an abuse of the Council itself. It is unfortunate that despite the resistance on the part of some of its members, this Council has allowed itself to be abused by the current U.S. administration in holding a meeting on an issue that falls outside the scope of its mandate, putting on display the failure of the Council to fulfill its real responsibility in maintaining international peace and security. It is a discredit for the Security Council to take up a matter that is of a pure domestic nature while failing abjectly to lift a finger when it comes to genuine issues such as the long-lasting occupation of Palestinian territory, to which this item is dedicated, and the indiscriminate bombing of Yemen in the past 3 years, which has so far resulted in the deaths of thousands of human beings, and has brought hunger, disease, and destruction on the Yemeni people. The least of such failures of the Council are all attributable to the obstructionist approach by the U.S. delegation, and goes on and on. Mr. President, This is nothing but another desperate attempt by the U.S. administration to escape forward, as it has lost every shred of moral, political, and legal authority and credibility in the eyes of the whole world. Following such acts of disruption taken by this U.S. administration as flouting international law and disrespecting the practices of civilized behavior in international politics, this administration is now desperately reaching for every straw that keeps it afloat. There is a long history of U.S. bullying at the U.N., but this is a preposterous example. The purely internal affairs of a nation, in this case, protests that the Iranian government has addressed with the utmost respect for the rights of the protesters and with every attempt to deal with peacefully, despite violent infiltrators and direct encouragement by foreign forces, including by the President of the United States, is not the subject of debate by the world's most important security organ. I would be remiss if I didn't mention, for those who may not remember, also the United States' long history of intervention in the internal affairs of Iran, a continuous pattern of disruption in the course of the democratization process in Iran can be traced back to the coup staged by the U.S. against Iran's democratically elected prime minister in 1953. Hostile acts intensified once Iranian rose up to overthrow their dictator ruler, who was unsurprisingly loved by the U.S. government. Since then, among others, the U.S. has backed attempted military coup and acts of sabotage in Iran, imposed illegal and inhuman unilateral sanctions against ordinary Iranians, unconditionally supported Saddam Hussein in his 8-year destructive war against Iranians, including by providing him with chemical weapons, and even directly engaged in military confrontation with Iran in defense of Saddam. I should also refer to the 290 innocent lives lost, including 66 children, on board Iran Air 655 shot down in July 1988 by the U.S. Navy in the Persian Gulf. It would be a remiss of me not to recall that the U.S. shamelessly decorated the commander who gave the order to fire. Mr. President, while President Trump may be enamored of the fact that no protesters demonstrated against his presence while he was in our neighborhood a few months ago, he may be unaware that they have no right to protest. The fact is that this every democratic country citizens will, from time to time, take to streets to protest one thing or another, and Iran is no exception. In every country, the security forces, be they police, national guards, or others, are present to ensure that protests remain peaceful, and Iran is, again, no exception. However, while the U.S. accuses Iran of suppressing protests, one can only gasp at the hypocrisy when viewing images of Occupy Wall Street protesters beaten and dragged by American policemen. And to go back in time, when National Guardsmen fired on and killed peaceful student protesters at Kent State University, or to watching film of the protests outside the Democratic National Convention in Chicago in 1968. Or more recently, we can review to the 1992 Los Angeles riots over the brutal beating of Rodney King by policemen and killings of innocent African-American at the hands of law enforcement continue unabated, as we all know. When the California Army National Guards, the 7th Infantry Division, and the 1st Marine Division were called in to restore order. A total of 63 people were killed during the uprising. 2,383 were injured, and more than 12,000 were arrested. I don't recall any member of the UN Security Council calling for debate on this issue when the US military was involved in suppressing domestic unrest. Nor was there debate in 1993 when the FBI raided the Branch Davidian headquarters in Waco, Texas, after a 51-day standoff killing 83 men, women, and children, the vast majority of whom were entirely innocent of any crime. It was behoove of U.S. ambassador, who perhaps was busy with other priorities at the time of their occurrence, to read up on these travesties of justice on American soil before condemning others for far less. But it is not just the U.S. that has an unviable record in dealing with protesters. In 2005 in France, then Interior Minister Nicolas Sarkozy declared a zero-tolerance policy toward protests emanating from the deprived suburbs of Paris, and other major French cities, referring to demonstrators, largely poor immigrants, as scum. With almost 3,000 arrests and several deaths, the unrest was only quelled to reemerge in multiple other forms, more recently in 2017, when the police rape of a young French citizen of African origin once again triggered protests. I do not, however, recall the UN Security Council being summoned for debate on this. And in 2011, in the United Kingdom, the Home Secretary, Theresa May, utterly condemned the violence amid protests in her country, saying such disregard for public safety and property will not be tolerated. Meanwhile, Prime Minister David Cameron warned rioters, "You will feel the full force of the law, and if you are old enough to commit these crimes, you are old enough to face punishment." In the span of merely a few days, some 3,100 arrests were made, and with the authorities told that they could ignore existing sentencing guidelines, two young men who promoted riots via Facebook with the proposed disturbances not attended by any other people were handed four-year sentences. I do not recall any country bringing any of these reactions to protest across the self-described civilized democracies to the attention of, let alone opening to debate at the United Nations Security Council. Mr. President, we have hard evidence of the violence in Iran by a handful of the protesters, in some cases resulting in the deaths of policemen and security officers, being very clearly directed from abroad. These violent elements surfaced in the crowd as early as Friday evening last week, at the inception of the protest. At that point, the hands of elements from outside Iran, including instigators based in the United States and Europe, began to be visible. Incitement to violence included encouraging and training people to use Molotov cocktails, to siege ammunition depots, and to stage an armed uprising. One U.S. resident took to social media to order the killing of 120 members of our security forces, threatening that those who will be included among the killed are their families, too, in their homes. This same U.S. resident publicly stated to U.S. media with complete sense of impunity that they should burn down government mosques and police stations. It was clear enough to not just us, but also third parties, that Telegram messengers executive decided to block some of the violent inciting channels, citing a line one shouldn't cross. All of this is also well documented in the mainstream media. In one case, a man with extensive criminal record captured a fire engine and ran it over a car, murdering the driver and his 12-year-old son. In some other cases, hooligans got involved and looted shops and banks. Altogether, the peaceful, legitimate protests, which my government emphatically confirmed are a constitutional right which has been respected since the Islamic Revolution, were abused and hijacked to stage vandalism, hooliganism, and in several cases, the firing of weapons. President Trump and some other U.S. politicians have joined ISIS and its patrons in our region to openly incite and encourage violence. It is the ultimate irony that the country whose head of state has thrown his lot in with those visiting violence and destruction on Iran has its UN ambassador, who has a history of belligerent comments on my country, bring it as an issue for debate on the Security Council. If anything, it is Iran that should be demanding a debate and investigation into how and why foreign elements with impunity are allowed to encourage and support unrest and violence in another sovereign and founding member of the United Nations. For example, let's debate why the United States has failed, in spite of repeated official requests, to stop the incitement to violence and murder of innocent civilians from its territory, or why some European countries continue to provide safe haven to terrorists who are inciting violence and armed rioting as we speak. Why social media sites that promote and teach the use of Molotov cocktail and boast about people using arms to kill in Iran operate freely in their territory in spite of clear evidence. There are the real issues that need to be addressed. Distinguished members, to make this farce into something more than a mere waste of time, let us discuss something else that this council has not, but should deal with. The free flow of information has brought with it the spread of fake news and other forms of information war. These threats are common to all free and sovereign nations. We are not alone in finding it necessary to formulate solutions to these challenges. Recently, French President Macron also lauded efforts to increase transparency about the ownership of websites, including their foreign funding, further empowerment of government agencies to fight against any attempt to destabilization by TV station control or influence by foreign states, and also suggested countering social media channels used as propaganda by introducing laws to disclose the source of funding for particularly sponsored content. These measures are not needed to simply fight back against fake news, rioters, and electoral interference, but more ominously in the fight against terrorists, including ISIS. This fight, distinguished members and colleagues, is not zero sum. We will either win together or lose together. Thank you, Mr. President.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.